Well, hello there, boys and girls, cats and dogs, and everybody else who has the pleasure, or maybe it's displeasure, of listening to this radio program. And we call it the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, and or mid-morning coffee break with yours truly, Adam. We talk about unusual, offbeat, and sometimes humorous news from the great world we live in, perhaps in the field of science, of technology, of course, of politics. How could we possibly avoid that? And like any program here on The Talking Place, there's always a surprise or two. If you have a suggested topic for this program, that would be wonderful. Send me an email. And, you know, just like Hillary and Melania, we have one of those private email servers. But unlike Hillary, we don't delete any of the emails. We read every single one of them. So feel free to send me a message, adam@wwgh1071.com. Topic that's always interested me is evolution. Are we evolved from the apes, the chimpanzees, gorillas, monkeys? Maybe we're evolved from reptiles. Some people tend to believe that. And, you know, the more people I meet, the more I tend to believe that maybe we do share more ancestry with snakes and lizards and alligators than we do with our friends, the chimps or the gorillas. Of course, our naturalist James Anderson sometimes talks about this kind of stuff, but I'm going to give you a little tidbit. This is going on at a few states to the west, the University of Missouri in Columbia. A talented researcher studying human evolution by looking at an island fox. Now, foxes are related to dogs. They're kind of similar, and they're kind of cute like dogs. They aren't always as cuddly and friendly as dogs, but foxes are a bit misunderstood. Most of them, they're in that category of they're more afraid of you than you are of them, but there certainly are some unfriendly foxes out there. Let's look at the island fox. Nearly two decades ago, check this out, a small-bodied human-like fossil, Homo floresiensis, was discovered on an island in Indonesia. Some scientists have credited the find, which is now nicknamed Hobbit, as representative of a human ancestor. Again, Homo floresiensis, that's the official name, pretty cool name. Anyway, this Hobbit, as it's nicknamed, is thought of as being a possible descendant of human beings, people like, yourself and myself and anybody else belonging to the species Homo sapiens. It developed smaller features after living on the island in Indonesia, because, again, foxes are quite a bit smaller than human beings. Other people suggest it represents a modern human suffering from some type of disease because of its distinct human-like face and small brain. Now, I know a lot of people with a very human face and a very small brain. In fact, some of them are probably in political office. Some may even be related to me. But this, on a more serious note, this is a human-type creature that some researchers believe. Again, small brain, but a very human-like face. Colleen B. Young is a graduate student in the Department of Anthropology at the University of Missouri in Columbia, not too far from here. She's always been curious about the nature of the human footprint, well, so have I, or how humans impact their environments, and vice versa. She believes the Hobbit adjusted from a longer-legged version of itself to meet the demands of an isolated island environment. She said Homo erectus, considered our recent ancestor, likely developed its long legs over time in order to increase its ability to walk long distances as its environment expanded. So when humans arrived on that island in Indonesia and became isolated, their bodies, once built for efficiency over long distances, were probably no longer beneficial for their new environment. Instead, a smaller body probably improved their lifestyle. Again, if you are small, you can get around places a lot easily. May not be as good in basketball, may not be as good as getting things off of the top shelf, but there certainly are advantages to being small, even in some sports, like being a jockey. That certainly is an advantage to be small and lightweight. So maybe she's onto something. Sounds like a pretty smart student, if you ask me. She's working on her doctorate degree in biological anthropology in the College of Arts and Sciences, again in Missouri. She tested several popular assumptions about the characteristics of Homo floresiensis by comparing an island fox from California's Channel Islands with its mainland U.S. relative, the more familiar, again, dog-like creature, the gray fox. Again, kind of looks like a dog, but they aren't always as friendly as a dog, but they're cute nonetheless. She said upon arrival, the island fox underwent a 30% reduction in body size and developed smaller body features that are different from the mainland gray fox. Again, evolution to adapt to the environment. And that certainly affects people in different parts of the country, different climates, different amounts of precipitation. So, again, I think she definitely has a very good point. She believes that this change in body size was likely due to adjustments the island fox made to survive in its new isolated environment. She said the gray fox is a migratory omnivorous animal, similar to our recent ancestors. The study indicates that animals living on islands that become smaller in size may also have distinct limbs and body features just because of their new island environment. Therefore, the distinctive body features on the small-bodied Homo floresiensis are probably products of evolving in an island environment and not resulting from suffering from diseases. She said this animal model, which includes taking into account the surrounding ecosystem, can help scientists better understand the body size and limbs of Homo floresiensis and how they relate to human ancestors. She thinks the model can also help open new doors in the field of anthropology. The popular idea that every little difference in a fossil means a discovery of a new species is probably not as accurate as once thought. There was probably a lot more variation going on throughout human evolution than we first thought. And these findings exemplify that variation can occur just by migrating to and living on an island. We're just starting to scratch the surface. So a smart, innovative researcher there studying a much closer link from an ancestry standpoint between human beings and the fox. Of course, if you're kind of a foxy person, some people say I'm foxy, some people say I'm just the opposite. That certainly could make sense. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1, on your FM dial. And you can get us anywhere in and around the wonderful city, historic city, right almost near the geographical center of the great state of Ohio, in Marion, on your radio dial the old-fashioned way. But if you're not in and around Marion, that's okay also. We have listeners all over. In fact, we have a listener, Lewis, in Arizona, who listens all the time. So if you're listening, Lewis, well, welcome aboard as always, and thank you for listening. Hopefully the show is entertaining, educational, and of course, good for a laugh or two. Tell your friends about the station. Anywhere in the world, you can listen online, WWGH1071.com. Use the TuneIn app to listen on your mobile device, or just pull up our handy-dandy website, click on the play button, and voila! The station is getting ready to provide interesting entertainment and, of course, lots of wisecracks and surprises to your ears. New research. There's a lot of new research going on, but this new research relates to robots. Yes, I'm not a robot. I'm a person. Well, if I was a robot, I might be interested in this. And yes, I would be. Well, anyway, robots, according to this new research, can encourage people to take greater risks in a simulated gambling scenario than they would if there was nothing to influence their behaviors. Gambling is always an interesting study in human behavior, everything from investing to going to the casino to playing a friendly game of poker with your friends or even just deciding if you want to ask a girl or boy out on a date. So we gamble all the time. Anyway, increasing our understanding of whether robots can affect risk-taking could have clear ethical, practical, and policy implications, which a particular study set out to explore. Let's go to Southampton in the United Kingdom, a little further away than Missouri, our last study overview. Dr. Yaniv Hanouk, good name, professor in risk management in Southampton, led the study. He said, "We know that peer pressure can lead to higher risk-taking behavior. With the ever-increasing scale of interaction between humans and technology, both online and physically, it is crucial that we understand more about whether machines can have a similar impact." The new research, which was recently published, involved 180 undergraduate students taking the Balloon Analog Risk Task, also known as BART. Not Bart Simpson, but BART, which is an acronym for Balloon Analog Risk Task. It is a computer assessment that asks participants to press the space bar on a keyboard to inflate a balloon displayed on the screen. With each press of the space bar, the balloon inflates slightly, and one penny is added to the player's, quote, temporary money bank. The balloons can explode randomly, meaning the player loses any money that he or she has won for that balloon and has the option to, quote, cash in before this happens and moves on to the next balloon. So you're taking a risk, just like investing, just like gambling. You're going to keep playing the machine and hopefully you'll get the big jackpot. You're going to keep a stock or bond and hope it'll keep going up or might it sink. Same thing with a balloon. It's going to keep inflating or it might pop. Gambling in many forms is a fascinating study, and that is for sure. So what happened here? One-third of the participants took the test in a room on their own. That's called the control group. One-third took the test alongside a robot that only provided them with the instructions, but was silent the rest of the time. And the third, the experimental group, took the test with the robot providing instruction as well as speaking encouraging statements such as, "Why did you stop pumping?" Like asking somebody, "Why did you stop playing that slot machine? Why did you leave the poker table? You are winning." Well, maybe you didn't want to press your luck. The results showed that the group who were encouraged by the robot took more risks, blowing up their balloons significantly more frequently than those in the other groups did. They also earned more money overall. There was no significant difference in the behaviors of the students accompanied by the silent robot and those with no robot. So did the robot make a difference? So Dr. Hanouk said, "We saw participants in the control conditions scale back their risk-taking behavior following a balloon explosion, whereas those in the experimental condition continued to take as much risk as before. So receiving direct encouragement from a risk-promoting robot seemed to override participants' direct experiences and instincts." So I kind of intrigued by that. If I go play a slot machine, should a robot be sitting next to me saying, "Adam, go ahead and spin. Risk $10, $20. You might win something big." Well, I might also lose my shirt. So that, again, is up for debate. The researcher now believes that further studies are needed to see whether similar results would emerge from human interaction with other artificial intelligence or AI systems like digital assistants or on-screen avatars. He said, "With the widespread of AI technology and its interaction with humans, this is an area that needs urgent attention from the research community. On the one hand, our results might raise alarms about the prospect of robots causing harm by increasing risky behavior. On the other hand, our data points to the possibility of using robots and artificial intelligence in preventative programs like anti-smoking, encourage people to quit smoking." Well, that certainly would be a good idea. "And hard-to-reach populations, like people who have a drug problem. This could be used in schools, maybe in a senior citizen center." So definitely worth pondering. How does artificial intelligence affect your ability to change an addictive, which could be possibly dangerous behavior, or to take a chance on something like the balloon blowing experiment? We talk about that kind of stuff here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio program and mid-morning coffee break, hosted actually 3 times a week. How about that? It's so good we play the show 3 times every week. Can't beat that. By myself, Adam Lepp, also known as Adam the Computer Guy, on the Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial. Of course, if you ever miss a program, my program, or anything else, you can always go to our website, WWGH1071.com, and find the program of your choice, going to the show archive section or my section or Scott's section. You can look at our holiday shows, our Christmas shows from previous years, special events like the Mr. Rogers stamp that I and others went to a few years ago, and much, much more. Celebrity interviews by Interviewer to the Stars, Scott Spears. There's just so much there. If I told you about everything on the website, it might be kind of boring because there's just so much. It's best just to see it yourself, but the show would probably be over. So instead, I encourage you to go to that site, WWGH1071.com, and see and hear for yourself. And I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised if you're not already aware of what's going on at that website. Also invite you to listen to the Mike Wilson radio program between about 5:13 p.m. and 6 Eastern time every Monday. Mike is a bit of a walking encyclopedia of the Morrow and Marion, Knox County areas. We call it the Mid-Ohio area. He knows a lot of important, famous, and knowledgeable people. He sometimes talks up to them on the radio, or he might discuss something that was previously pondered in a broadcast. The Mike Wilson program, such a good program, doesn't really have a name. It's just the Mike Wilson Show here on the Talking Place, WWGH radio. Interesting guests, always a wisecracker too. We kind of have a system like that here at the radio station, and you might learn something. And of course, you also are likely to laugh a few times. And as I say, especially in these hard times, laughter is the best medicine. 5:13 p.m. to 6 Eastern Time, Monday, right here on your favorite radio station. I hope it's your favorite station, WWGH Radio. Virtual reality consumer spending growth has been driven by headsets. You know, it's right around the holiday season, people getting gifts for loved ones, coworkers, family, and anybody else. For years, the consumer virtual reality market has failed to fulfill the hype surrounding it, but that's going to change, according to a report. It's going to change in the next 5 years. The forecast by Omdia, a market analysis firm based in London, that's England, not London, Ohio, it predicts the value of the virtual reality hardware and software market to reach, check this out, in 5 years, in 2025, $10 billion. That's more than 3 times what it is right now. Omdia anticipates there will be 45 billion active users of virtual reality headsets in 5 years' time, who will be spending $4 billion on virtual reality games and other media. Standalone headsets appear to be leading the growth curve for virtual reality, according to this report. 3.3 million of those headsets will be sold in 2020, besting sales of smartphone and tethered headsets for the first time. How about that? More virtual reality headsets sold than smartphones. A total of 6.4 million virtual reality headsets will be sold in 2020. George Djafali. Yes, that's his name. George Djafali. Great name. We have so many great names of people we quote in this show. That's part of the fun of doing it. He is a senior analyst at Omdia, said, after getting caught up in the industry hype and proving unable to live up to the unrealistic expectations set in 2016, VR, virtual reality, is now undergoing a much-needed period of readjustment. the product mix of the virtual reality installed base is changing rapidly away from rapidly abandoned smartphone virtual reality headsets to more engaging standalone and tethered virtual reality headsets. As with the games market generally, the report noted that the VR segment benefited from people being cooped up in their homes due to coronavirus. Not surprising. If you're at home and bars are closing early, malls are not open or they're restricted a bit, can't go to a sporting event, well, playing a video game sounds like a pretty good idea. Spending on virtual reality content broke the $1 billion mark in 2020, but those numbers could have even been higher had there not been manufacturing challenges during the first part of 2020, and the splashy introduction of new game consoles diverting the attention and money of players away from virtual reality during the second half of 2020. While the coronavirus created demand for virtual reality content, it also hurt the market by putting a crimp in the supply chain. I believe the pandemic initially hindered VR, with companies like Facebook struggling to ship the first Oculus Quest in the first 6 months of the year, while demand for headsets was skyrocketing. And that comes from Anshel Seg, a senior analyst with More Insights and Strategy. Although Facebook has devoted significant promotional efforts in the consumer virtual reality space, Anshel Seg maintains the company could be a barrier to the technology's growth. He said, "I believe Facebook's dominance of consumer VR, especially with PSVR, and that would be the famous Sony PlayStation virtual reality, not being a viable option right now. It's a big barrier." He said there's no clear alternative to Oculus, and while they have the most diverse and complete library of content, as well as the most accessible and greatest hardware, there are a lot of people who will stay away from virtual reality because they don't like or don't want Facebook. Facebook has become a bit controversial with their deciding if a news story is fake or partially fake, and some people say they're a bit biased, but again, it's a private business. If you don't like Facebook, no one is making you participate. But of course, they kind of have a monopoly, so not really much you can do about it. We certainly use Facebook here at the station to communicate, both among ourselves and with listeners. Kind of hard to change that at this point. Now, Omdia asserted Facebook's Oculus headset is broadening the market by successfully balancing the all-in-one form factor with a high-quality, immersive virtual reality experience at an attractive price point. The Quest 2 starts at $299. Facebook is making high-quality virtual reality more accessible than ever before. As a hybrid headset, Quest straddles both standalone and PC-tethered categories, giving its owners flexibility and access to a wider range of content. Omdia estimates that 1.2 Quest units will be sold in 2020, and in 2025, 5.6 million. Facebook's aggressive loss leader strategy has meant that other headset manufacturers simply can't compete, leading to many shifting their focus to the adjacent enterprise virtual reality category. According to Omdia, Facebook's share of global standalone VR headset sales will drop over the next 5 years from 48% in 2020 to 35% in 2025. But again, that is still quite a bit. And Facebook certainly not being short of any funds or popularity, and I don't look at that to change anytime in the near future. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial and broadcasting online by the power and magic of the internet at WWGH1071.com. Of course, we don't talk much about politics here, and when we do, we just try to present the news and not offer much in the way of commentary, although with myself, a wisecrack is often in order. You've probably heard of Alex Jones, the infamous conspiracy theorist. Very controversial dude, and we've mentioned him from time to time on this station. Well, what is he up to? conspiracy theorist Alex Jones denounced President-elect Joe Biden's White House victory before a crowd of Donald Trump supporters early in December, declaring that, quote, we will never recognize Biden and that he will be removed from office one way or another. He said we will never back down to the satanic, pedophile, globalist New World Order and their walking dead, reanimated corpse, Joe Biden. And we will never recognize him. He said that from a stage at the second so-called Million MAGA March in Washington. He said, so I don't know what's going to the White House in 38 days, but I sure know this. Joe Biden is a globalist, and Joe Biden will be removed one way or another. His comments appeared to echo the far-right conspiracy theory QAnon, which alleges without evidence that Satan-worshipping pedophiles are plotting against Trump. His use of the word globalist also raised concerns about anti-Semitism, as the term has been increasingly used in xenophobic and anti-Semitic contexts. David Weissman, who was involved with the anti-Trump Republican group, the Lincoln Project, was among those highlighting Jones's choice of language and warning that his speech appeared to be a call for violence. He said the anti-Semitic trope should also be considered a threat, and Alex Jones should be arrested for incitement. He tweeted that, echoing similar tweets that tagged the FBI. At this point, Donald Trump still refuses to concede the election, claiming that the election was stolen from him. Certainly in 2020, a year of many surprises, most of which, unfortunately, were not good surprises, this doesn't seem to be overly surprising. And I just present that as a news story rather than something that I'll also make an opinion about. Certainly there is controversy on both sides. That's what makes good talk radio. If everybody agreed in everything all the time, the world would be a pretty boring place. And especially on Scott Spears' show, he has viewpoints from all sides, and we encourage you to listen to that program Monday through Friday morning, 8:13 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern Time, for a variety of guests, your phone calls, and as you probably know, I call the show from time to time, and all kinds of opinions which you may or may not agree with. Here on this program, we try to laugh a little bit, try to provide you with some information, and like anything on this station, always a surprise or two. On this program, we really don't go any 45-minute segment without discussing Facebook and also Google and other popular apps and websites, and communication methods are often fodder for this program. You've probably heard that the U.S. Department of Justice recently smacked Google with an antitrust case. Well, now the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has launched an antitrust case of its own against Facebook. Now, it's a little different from the Google case. This particular case is aiming for a breakup of Facebook, according to the New York Times. The case concerns Facebook's history of buying on-the-rise social apps, sniffing out future competition, and reducing the end user's experience. We've talked about this before, Instagram especially. 8 years ago, they bought Instagram for $1 billion. In 2014, Facebook bought WhatsApp, a popular messaging platform, kind of an alternative to standard texting and calling, for $19 billion. Today, Facebook is worth close to a trillion, over $790 billion. No wonder Mark Zuckerberg is so rich. Annual revenue is over $80 billion, and four products boost over 1 billion users: Facebook, WhatsApp, Messenger, and Instagram. Instagram alone, 1.1 billion users, about three times the population of the United States of America. That's no small potatoes. One of Facebook's defenses is the very fact that the FTC approved these mergers years ago. So there's the irony. The FTC approved the mergers, but now they want to break the company up. That doesn't sound like they're playing fair, or maybe they are. Maybe they didn't realize what would happen with these mergers. Facebook further contends that without its infrastructure and social expertise, the likes of Instagram and WhatsApp would have not seen the same growth. In more recent years, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has latched onto TikTok as an argument against a breakup of Facebook. First, the video app's hockey stick rise, so to speak, proves that social media remains competitive. Second, Facebook is a defense against the rise of social apps from China, which has a, quote, dangerous approach to internet regulation, according to Mark Zuckerberg. These are some of the most severe penalties regulators can demand, according to the New York Times. The case, which took 18 months to put together, will likely take years to resolve. Somewhat ironically, Facebook announced a $1 billion acquisition of chatbot startup Customer. That's Customer with a K, recently. So if the FTC is victorious and determines that Facebook is an unfair monopoly, the period of freewheeling big tech may come to an end. Well, isn't that interesting? Zuckerberg will certainly still be rich, and many people will have made very good money by investing in Facebook, by working for Facebook. But if they're determined to be a monopoly and forced to break up, that will certainly be a news story for the ages. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial, and broadcasting online over the great thing that we call the internet at WWGH1071.com. Not surprisingly, one of the jobs that has suffered during the current situation, the coronavirus, and all the unfortunate events connected to this this pandemic, are airline pilot jobs. Most people think that pilots have a pretty good job. It's certainly exciting. You get to travel across the United States, across the world, be in charge of a great big plane, and the money's not too bad. In fact, in 2018, it was the number two most right-swiped male occupation on the famous dating app Tinder. In 2016, it was number one. So yeah, if you want to date a pilot, that was considered pretty cool. In the United States, median salary is pretty good. A lot more than I make here at the station, $130,000. But of course, a lot of training and a lot of promotions to become the pilot on a major airline flight. Due to the expertise required and the boom or bust nature of air travel, pilots' unions are also among the world's most powerful, according to the Wall Street Journal. Now, unlike many other jobs, one thing you can't do with a pilot, you can't work remotely. You can't control a plane by sitting at your house. You must be in the cockpit of the airplane. So not surprisingly, with the current world situation, the airline pilot industry has become much less attractive. American Airlines has furloughed 1,600 pilots. Norwegian Airlines has furloughed or cut almost 2,000 jobs. And for the first time ever, Southwest Airlines might be furloughing pilots. You think of them as being a pretty healthy airline. They have some nice gimmicks, low pricing, but even they have some problems. Even airlines that have avoided job cuts, like Delta, a big airline here in Ohio, they have a hub in the nearby Cincinnati Northern Kentucky Airport. They're guaranteeing fewer hours and reducing pay. One union president tells the Wall Street Journal that he believes airlines are angling to use the coronavirus pandemic to cut costs permanently. Now, the furlough schemes typically put the most junior pilots out of work first, making it difficult to pay off the training. But if airlines lose too much capacity, it could burn them in a few years. A United Airlines executive recently said, if you think the industry is going to be recovered by 2025, we need to start to think about how to attract those pilots of the future today. So the current situation certainly affecting many occupations, and not surprisingly, pilots and others in the transportation industry, where they transport people for leisure, are taking a hit, and let's see if they can recover. Certainly, there are many cool things about being an airline pilot, but there certainly are some risks that you take if you choose that occupation. I think the transportation industry, be it people for leisure, people for business, cargo, is an important part of our American infrastructure, and I like to think it will recover and be better than ever. It may take a little bit of time, but I'm certainly pulling for it. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, covering a variety of stories today, sometimes off-the-wall topics, sometimes topics a bit more serious, and oftentimes news stories which might cause you to think or decide what your opinion about the topic might be. I think this one is in that last category. As we've talked about, as you know, many people are working from home due to the coronavirus. And so how does that affect office romance and office affairs? Ongoing affairs have obviously been complicated. Without the office and after-work happy hours, close bonds with questionable boundaries are less likely to develop into something physical. Talal H. Al-Salim, a marriage therapist in California, said, "Physical closeness at work not only allows for more opportunities of forming inappropriate emotional attachments to colleagues, but it also allows for these attachments to flourish via physical interactions. There's flirtatious comments, oversharing of personal information, going on walks, or just taking lunches together. More importantly," he said, "an in-office work environment can trick people into ignoring or minimizing any inappropriate or borderline behaviors and attachments. At home, with your spouse possibly in the other room, that facade doesn't exist. So is the office affair dead?" Caroline Madden, a marriage and family therapist who specializes in infidelity recovery counseling, has seen just how tenacious the unfaithful can be, even amid a global pandemic. "People are getting caught in record numbers, according to Madden's anecdotal evidence." She said sales of her book, Blindsided by His Betrayal, have been especially high. She said work from home did quash emotional affairs from turning into physical ones, but people are in emotional affair hyperdrive right now. Interestingly, she said clients are confiding in her that they're surprised at how much they miss certain coworkers now that they don't see them regularly. She said they didn't fully appreciate that they were maybe falling in love with someone until that person wasn't there physically anymore and there was no excuse to contact them. "In some cases, people may have emotional affairs at work and not even realize it." She said emotional affairs are all about the secret texting and inside jokes. "One of the reasons people have affairs is to escape from the pressures of home. Lots of pressure equals lots of need to escape. And though the office may be closed, local hotels are open. Supermarkets and retail stores are open also, supplying spouses with an easy excuse for why they're not around." The big lie, she said at the beginning on the pandemic, back when we all thought it would be 2 weeks, was, quote, "I'm going to Costco." They would be gone a very long time and come home with nothing to show for it. Seriously, this seems to be in the cheater's guide in a pandemic. Or people will say they have to run to work or pick something up at the office, or that they want to get COVID tested, when in reality, they're meeting up with their affair partner. Well, isn't that being kind of sneaky? The calculating cheater now uses the workplace as the excuse. Chris is a tax accountant in Dallas. And Chris said, "A married coworker who is seeing another coworker on the side simply tells her husband that work wants her at the office Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That allowed them both to spend 9 hours together doing everything they've always wanted to do at the guy's place, but could not with so many coworkers around. He said that they began forming a bond much deeper than it had been initially with so much time together. It became something more than just an affair. They talked openly of moving in together after a few months. And now the charade is still going on, unbeknownst to the woman's husband. Now, not all cheaters are this successful. If both partners are working from home, that gives the betrayed partner a lot more opportunities to pick up on questionable behavior. Spouses are overhearing conversations or noticing that their significant other clings tightly to their phone all day, even while stuck at home. If you're talking to your coworker turned affair partner on Slack or GChat throughout the day, you run the risk of your actual partner seeing a message pop up. In some instances, affair partners who are sick of being put on the back burner during the pandemic come out of the wings and divulge the affair. This has always been a common way that a wife is found out. Usually the reason is that the husband has tried to call off the affair, and then the affair partner retaliates by calling the wife. In other cases, the cheating spouse ends things because he or she has become too exhausted to live a double life during a global pandemic. As the quarantine turned from 2 weeks to 2 months to 9 months, the lies and excuses were harder and harder to come up with. They broke it off to avoid getting caught. Of course, affairs that start outside office walls have been impacted by coronavirus also, or in some cases, have been discovered. Zach is a tech worker in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He had been seeing a young lady for 7 months prior to COVID. He discovered he was actually the other man because of the lockdown. The woman's work hours were cut, and her school program ended a quarter early, which should have increased her availability. When it didn't, Zach got suspicious. Prior to COVID, we talked and texted several times a day and met in person on average once a week. After lockdown, we spoke less and less until our phone conversations were limited to when she was in the car. Come to find out, her primary partner was home all day. Zach and the woman ended things, and he suspects that her significant other found out. So, sneaky things going on, whether or not we are in 2020 or another year. And especially with all the technology, all the messaging apps, video conferencing, I think it's going to get more and more complicated and possibly more and more amusing. Speaking of more and more amusing, we try to tickle a funny bone or two here on the Adam the Computer Guy and Mid-Morning Coffee Break radio programs, and I thank you very much for listening. It's about time to bid a fond adieu. We are with you every Monday between approximately 10:13 a.m. and 11 after Scott Spears, and Tuesday and Thursday, 2:13 to 3 in the afternoon Eastern Time on The Talking Place. If you have a question, comment, suggestion, complaint, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to send me an email anytime on our private email server, adam@wwgh1071.com.
Do you ever ponder? Do you ever wonder? Do you ever question in my server serving me? Your computer will print. Should you call the president? What in the world are you gonna do? Call Adam, the computer guy. Call Adam. Don't know the reason why. Do you find it a waste of time? Because you cannot get online. Call Adam, the computer guy. Or go online to AdamTheComputerGuy.com. There's a click of the mouse.
See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile. What you told me nearly made me lose my head. When the thought of what you told me nearly made me lose my head. But the next time that I saw her, reminded her of what she said. See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile.
worry, pretty daddy. You know my love is just for you. She said, I'm sorry, pretty daddy. You know my love is just for you. Won't you say that you'll forgive me and say your love for me is true? I said, oh, wait a minute, dear.
Later, alligator.